From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the Jack and Spike Show.
Welcome back to the Jack and Spike Show. GOP candidates battle for an endorsement in the Washington governor's race. Lauren Culp chimed in, so I know who I'm not going to be voting for.
Good for you, man.
Based on what Lauren Culp said, SPS faces a massive budget deficit. Here's what to expect. Nothing. No money. That's what you can expect. But before we get to all that, our very own jitterbug, Mr. Jason Rantz in the studio. Jason, premier conservative commentator over at 770 KTTH. Jason, why hath you been harassing this poor, weird man over at Self? Why? He just wants to say crazy things and do weird things with students and you know, put up mistruths and falsities about the world that we live in.
He wants to smear an entire group of people because they happen to be Jewish and then side with Hamas in a weird way. What's the damage?
Why would you harass such a fine, upstanding person who says awful things about groups of people in broad, generalized ways that's reminiscent of the Nazis? Like, why would you possibly want to?
Because he can. That's why Jason does it.
Because I like to get myself into some trouble. Now, we're talking about Ian Golash. He is a high school teacher over at Chief South. You guys have talked about him before. I've been covering him for a few months now for a variety of reasons, but a lot of it has to do with his just blatant anti-Semitism. And one of my reports caught the attention of a group called Accuracy in Media. It's a conservative group that has been really at the forefront of going to colleges and schools, I guess, in general, all around the country where there's been a lot of anti-Semitism. They purchase digital billboards where they call out the anti-Semites and they try to either talk directly to them or to talk to people who either know them or go to school with them, just to highlight the fact that these are pretty bad people at the end of the day with what they're saying. And so Adam Gillette, who's the president over there, he actually got an interview with Ian Golash, who walked outside of his classroom with his students, and I believe based on some folks I've talked to, without any parental consent, and did a weird interview. And it was super bizarre. The full video comes out tomorrow, but we do have some clips.
Your post said that their oppressors don't get to choose the form of resistance used against them. You didn't write that?
That is true.
Well, then was what happened to Israel on October 7th justified?
Yes.
The rape of women at a music festival was justified.
Where's the evidence that there was rape?
You don't think there was any rape?
Where's the evidence that there was rape?
Okay. Were women murdered at the music festival?
They were.
Was that justified?
Yes.
The murder of innocent women just attending a music festival, that was justified in your opinion?
No. I think resistance against Israel is justified, yes.
Is he on something?
Is that bell ringing in the background, the sound that goes off every time he's about to make a bad decision?
We would not be able to hear him if that were the case.
He sounds like he's on downers. I'm not trying to cast aspersions. I'm not making any claims. I say that as a statement of opinion, not fact, for legal reasons. But that guy, if I had to guess, let's just say I was going to buy drugs and it's me when I'm 25 and I run into this guy in somebody's trap house and he's talking like that, I would say, that's the guy who has the benzodiazepines. Yeah,
and you wouldn't take the students out with you, though, right? You'd have that much common sense. Hey, can I ask about that really quick? Because I know that he took the students outside. If I understand correctly, there was a billboard, one of those mobile billboards that had accusations against this teacher.
It was just quoting him, and it had his website.
I'm not arguing the validity of the billboard, but I understood the story that he brought the students out to see the billboard against him to show them that free speech sometimes is painful to see.
Well, he didn't quite explain why he did it, but a student gave a general statement saying we came out here to learn about free speech. But that student in particular, though, probably my favorite part of this full interview.
Hey, good afternoon. What do you think about Ian Golash and his anti-Semitism? What are your thoughts?
I don't like it, honestly. How has he not been fired yet?
There's him leaving.
How has he not been fired yet? I mean, I've read his posts. He's anti-Semitic. And he's a criminal, I think.
I think he's been arrested a couple times.
Yeah, why is the school allowed to do that? Why is the district allowed to hire him?
Have you had him as a teacher?
I actually am a part of his class right now. He's taking us out as an example of free speech.
So he's taking you out of the class to us right now?
Yeah, he's right down there.
Oh, that kid is so based.
Oh, I love that kid.
So based.
Did Did the teacher, was he aware that he was going to be interviewed, or was he just trying to show them the billboard?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. He didn't give any indication. So okay. Adam just goes up to him, starts asking the questions, which we
right.
played.
That's kind of a guerrilla interview, which happens all the time, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, they didn't hide it. It wasn't necessarily guerrilla in the sense that, like, the camera guy was hiding in the background. He was out there.
It wasn't a prearranged
interview. It wasn't a prearranged interview, correct. Gotcha. And it went on for about 7-8 minutes. And again, I watched the full video. They sent it over to us just because I want to make sure everything's in context. Nothing was edited misleadingly. And no, it was all in context. This guy holds horrific views. You can have a completely different view than I do on Israel versus Hamas, but everything that he just said there is just disgusting. And this is not someone who deserves to be in front of kids. He should not be teaching in any way, shape, or form children at any school, period. And if I'm a kid in that class who's Jewish, I would never step foot in that class again. And any parent who's got a kid there should pull them immediately.
So he's denying, I forget how many women have come out and given accounts
there
of the way that
there was just a huge story in the New York Times.
Yeah.
With a rape survivor who was held hostage. She gave brutal details on what happened to her. And then, of course, you've got the UN investigation that said there was mass rape. I mean, at some point, yeah. You're choosing to ignore all of those details because it doesn't fit in with your worldview. But even if you were to take that out, he still acknowledges that innocent civilians were murdered. And who are we to judge the way that they push back against the oppression that they're feeling?
I know where this mentality comes from because I dealt with it all the time at UCSC, my alma mater. So the idea is that if you are a colonizer, it by label, right? Heavy mm-hmm. quotation marks there. You are deserved of any treatment that any militant group would receive. Does that make sense? So the far left does not make a distinction philosophically between a civilian population and a military mm-hmm. Organization if they are, quote unquote, colonizing the same area, because they consider it to be what they call land violence, if that makes sense. So
yeah,
by stealing the resources,
yeah.
you are depriving it from those people who are owed it. And so you are thus committing a form of violence and are thus subjected to violence, which is why he says that when he says, it's fine that they were killed.
And this is why I make the distinction between the left and the radical left, right? Democrats hold views that are generally pretty in line with Republicans when it comes to Israel. This is someone who represents the radical side of things.
Clearly, yeah. And again, how is this guy allowed to continuously? The evidence has been coming for months.
And so if you go to mynorthwest.com, I've got a story up right now. It also shows I read a whole lot of emails that were sent between him and some other students and colleagues. The school has been well aware of his anti-Semitic views. Mm-hmm. He created a flyer for BDS to try to convince students to boycott so-called pro-Israel businesses. This is a guy who's bringing politics into the classroom in such a despicable way. And again, SPS, Seattle Public Schools, they said, okay, we're looking into it, but we have no comment at this time because it's a personnel matter. Well, you better figure out what it is you're going to do here, and you better come forward and tell us and be open about it, because this is absurd.
Jason, thank you so much for covering this guy. I don't want to take up too much of your time because I know you have a show to do. But do you have any final thoughts for us before we wrap all this up, my friend?
I just want everyone to see the story and share the story.
Yeah.
So we can actually put pressure on the district to do something. Because if this was a guy who was talking in this way against black people, against trans people, against Muslims, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. It would be they had already terminated him. But when you do this towards Jews, apparently it's okay. So what message is SPS sending Jews?
Thank you very much for your time, Mr. Rance, our very own jitterbug, causing problems and harassing this man who did awful, terrible things.
Clearly deserves one.
Who did terrible things. This is the same teacher, by the way, who a while back, he failed that student for the saying that men can't get pregnant.
Yes.
And so we don't have to get into it, but this is somebody who, I wouldn't say that this is somebody who should be fired for free speech. That's not the argument. This is someone who should be let go because of their ineptitude in teaching. Does that make sense?
I agree completely with us.
Yeah. I mean, it's sad because if there was some way to rehabilitate Mr. Golash, I would like to do that. But what happens to people is that when you have a certain amount of emotional buy-in on a particular ideology, it's very difficult to back out of it. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah. Well, it's clearly a lack of any professionalism. You have to leave it at the door if you're in charge of educating kids.
I'm more so talking about the emotional aspect of it. Like, you have to basically, like, so we do mental work every day to reinforce our philosophies, our ethics, our morals, the way that we see the world, right? Mm-hmm. It's just something that we do as human beings.
Right.
And so it takes a lot of emotional work, and I don't mean this in a good way, to put yourself in a philosophic position where you are okay with 21-year-old kids at a music festival being murdered. Yeah. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
Like, that's a lot of emotional. That guy is doing deadlifts in that kind of realm, trying to work that muscle in his brain, and unfortunately it's backfired. Speaking of, by the way, GOP candidates battle for the endorsement in the Washington governor's race. I'm just going to say this flat out. So you got Dave Reichert, who everybody is a big old fan of. And then you've got, what's his name? Congressman Byrd, right?
Yeah.
So Chief Culp weighed in on this. We've already kind of ripped into Chief Culp today, but I'll do it again because why not, right? Why not just rip into that nice man that he is? So he said, "If it's not a win if you put a Democrat in office," referencing
Reichert. Yeah.
"Vote for the right man, not because you're told to, because you know who the best choice is, and then let God take it from there." That's what he wrote on X. So I would imagine that if you've got someone like Representative Byrd, who also refers to Dave Reichert as a rhino, Republican in name only, that title used to be very narrow, the rhino title. It used to be very narrow, right?
Yeah.
And now it has expanded out to basically mean anybody who's not like full fascist, full MAGA,
yeah.
Full, you know what I mean? Election
denial.
Obviously
not wearing a red hat, but you put a better point on it, yeah.
Does the congressman, is he an election denier as well? I'm curious. I'm not quite sure about what his platform is.
I can't imagine how Culp would endorse Byrd so strongly if he wasn't of that same mentality.
Right.
And, you know, rhino is now being thrown at people like Liz Cheney. That's not rhino. It's just non-MAGA. And anybody but MAGA isn't good enough.
If you know, William F. Buckley used to have this, he had this great quote that he was saying, and he goes, you know, you put 10 independents or conservatives in a room, you're going to get 10 different conversations about the issues. You're going to get 10 different perspectives on the issue.
Because
you put a bunch of liberals in a room, they're all going to be voting, or they're going to be agreeing with each other. It's a joke that he made, but I think that now that's been flipped. I really do believe this. Where if you put 10 libs in a room and you talk about abortion or trans people, they're going to say, "Well, I think that it should be 24 weeks, and I'm fine with trans people, but they shouldn't be playing in boy sports or whatever it is." Yeah, right? But now with the GOP, I think unfortunately with Republicans and conservatives, you put 10 of them in a room, they're all going to be like, "Okay, so we're all supposed to be anti-trans, right? And we're all supposed to be like really a certain way about abortion." It's all very lockstep-y. The reason I say this is because I'm on the receiving end of it on a daily basis. And it's really annoying.
Somebody asked earlier, how can we keep pretending Jack's a Republican? Well, Jack, how can you keep pretending that the party still represents the values traditionally
you know
that it did?
You know what it is, Spike? I don't like it. I don't like what conservatism is right now. I really don't. Like, it's anti-trans, which is basically saying I'm anti-science. You are, if you don't believe the election was legitimate, it's election denial, it's anti-democratic. It's nasty. And so people say, well, what about leftism? Like, everyone always asks me that. They go, what about the crazy leftists out there? I want gay people to be able to get married. I don't want the state involved with someone's private medical decisions if they're a trans person. Does that make me some crazy leftist? You know what I mean? Like, there is this weird thing that's happening right now where conservatism has become very cutthroat. It is not very warm and it's not very welcoming. And the people who align themselves with conservatism, look at what happened with that guy in Enid, Oklahoma. We were going to do this story, but there was too much background, and so we decided to scrap it. But it's a really fascinating story. A guy in Enid, Oklahoma, runs for city council, and he wins, and he runs as a MAGA guy. That community, which is largely Republicans, found out that he actually was a neo-Nazi. Not hyperbolic, meaning he was at the Unite rally, and he was talking about killing Jews and killing black people. And he was one of the tiki guys at that rally.
Yeah.
And so he basically lied to get a position. So he basically said, I'm a MAGA person, and he just folded right into that.
Yeah.
And so that
little,
overlook it all. That little town, Enid, Oklahoma, they bandied together, and what three Democrats that are in that county or whatever, they bandied together, and they showed everybody his social media posts, and as of last week, he was removed from office, as he should be. Here's a question for you. Why are neo-Nazis folding themselves into conservatism? Why? I'll tell you why. Because they see an easy in, and why is that the case? Because it is easy to fold in. Why aren't they going to leftists or libs or whatever and trying to fold in and hide amongst libs, right? That should be alarming to people when all of a sudden you've got strange bedfellows with neo-Nazis. That should be really, in the same way that any hardcore leftist out there should be concerned about Ian Golash folding in with them.
Perfect.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Perfect example, yeah.
And so if you're unwilling to be critical of your own political party, you have no business being a part of that party. Does that make sense? Like,
yep.
If you're just going to walk in lockstep because, Liz Cheney bad, Mitt Romney bad, whatever it might be,
Kevin McCarthy bads.
Kevin McCarthy is the
low bar,
right?
To get over nowadays.
I mean, this is a weird, distorted, and perverted view of American politics that's being proliferated by people who are largely afraid to say anything to the counter narrative. And when people, here's the crazy thing about it. When people cast my character into question, they do so not for me, but to signal to everybody else that they're on the same page as the part. Do you see what I'm saying?
I do.
It's not for me. It's their signaling to the others. Look at how just I am in my retribution. Look at how just I am in my righteous indignation against, quote unquote, the system, even though the quote unquote system is what has given us this beautiful country in the first place. It's really annoying. And that's why I think that Chief Culp is totally wrong about this.
And his endorsement just cost
And his endorsement
your
just
vote.
Got.
Yeah, cost per your vote.
Cost my. Because if it comes down to it, I'm just going to vote for Riker, right? I mean, I'm just going to go in that direction. I'm not going to vote for some loon bag, right? Semi Bird. I'm not going to vote. Is that the guy who filled out the thing all. Do you remember that? Isn't he the guy that filled out his vote for me thing all.
Oh, I believe you're right.
Didn't he do that? Laura, can you Google this really quick? Semi Bird. I think he filled it out. It was basically nonsensical, right?
I think you're right.
It's like a word salad.
Yeah, but his application to run for the office itself was a complete word salad.
Yeah,
I think when you're talking about people who are trying to rule from a minority position through gerrymandering, and when the House of Representatives is controlled by Republicans, yet a vast more Americans voted in those races, you can't afford to kick anybody out of the coalition. You have to accept the extremists. Otherwise, you don't have the numbers to get over the top.
Yeah, Laura, was that Semi Bird who did that word salad?
I think it was.
Yes. Because that thing, if I could read that thing, it was almost nonsensical.
We'll dig it up for you.
It almost didn't make any sense whatsoever. It was almost like this bizarre mishmash of words and oh, I can't find it. Ah, man, if we could only find it, that would be so great. Anyway, we're out of time. We'll take a really quick break when we get back. How much does it cost to save a relationship? Should be basically nothing, right? You should be able to work it out yourself. This person, $11,000 in therapy bills. At that point in time, you might want to not, right?
Yeah. How much putty can I put on the sailboat before I keep trucking across the ocean?
Yeah.
Keeps
all right.
Taking water.
We'll talk about this when we get back right after this. From first to last. What a great record this was, right, Andrew, from first to last? You remember this record, right?
I definitely do.
Oh, man. This is the scene, man. This is a good old days when the scene was a thing. Listen out. Oh, perfect. I'm such a nerd for scene music. It's not even funny. It's so cringe, right? Because the scene was like we all dressed like girls and dyed our hair and got bad tattoos, right? We all wore like women's jeans and did too much cocaine. Nate, you were there. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Been there, done that.
That's what I'm talking about, brother. But the scene was like, well, most people don't know it because it was such a weird blip in the cultural space, right? It was like the scene is post-hardcore, right?
Okay, what year is we talking about? The scene.
Scene is like 2002 to right around Mumford & Sons, ruined everything for everybody, right? So that's like 2012, 2014. Very short period of time where the scene was a thing. And then it became weird, like you started seeing people, they were dressing and doing their hair kind of like they fell asleep on a bag of Skittles. Do you know what I mean?
Just
like, with a lot of weird stuff going on. But the early scene was where it's at, my friend. A lot of relationships started in the scene. That's a nice segue. So would you spend $11,000 in therapy to save your relationship? There's an article in The Cut talking about how much people spend on couples therapy. Now, couples therapy is very expensive. I know this because, as you know, my former partner, she works in therapy, mm-hmm. and a very good friend of mine, Neil, does couples therapy, and he charges $350 an hour for that service.
Wow.
Now, most of the time, talking to couples therapists, there are two things that I've found that is the most interesting about the stuff that they talk about. One, normally people are spending money on how to navigate the end of a relationship more often than not, if that makes sense.
Really?
The rifts are so deep, the communication is so shattered, that most of the time these are people who are attempting to navigate how to separate from each other.
Interesting. I would think the exact opposite. I would think they're investing in making it work. Well, otherwise, why bother?
Because most of the time you have to put a lot of work into that level of communication, and often neither party has the skills. And the other thing is that often therapists are trying to find out who the relationship is organized around, because that is where the origin or the locus of the toxicity is, because that's the person who holds the most power in the relationship.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense. So, thanks, Dr. O'Reilly.
So, for instance, it's when dad gets home, dad doesn't talk to the kids for at least an hour because he has to come down after work. And on top of that, he does not ever cook dinner or make dinner for anybody. And the house always has to be clean. So all these rules in a relationship,
mm-hmm.
these are things that can potentially not always lead to a schism between people. Who are we organizing our lives around? Well, when mom gets back from Pilates, mom is not responsible for, you understand what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Whoever we organize the family around is the person who is in power. And that's the person who has to recognize what their behavior is doing to the family unit. It's not always a bad thing, but it's difficult to get that person to recognize, oh my God, the entirety of the family is orbiting around me in this very heliotropic kind of orbit, right? And I need to fix this and put tension and a focus on other people.
Couples therapy seems to be we've never had couples therapy. It's been
you and I. No, we haven't. No. But we should go to couples therapy. I think
probably we play it out every day for 3 hours.
I hate you.
We should be charging.
You never
the
listen
city.
To me.
I'm trying. I was speaking more to the truly unpleasant Mrs. O'Neill. And I wouldn't. I just I'm boggled by what you said initially, that people use therapy to navigate their way out.
Well, because they don't know how to talk, right? So like when most couples, when they have a disagreement. In a healthy couple with people who have healthy egos, it's, I have this thing that I'm feeling insecure, frustrated, whatever it is, and I need your help with it. That's a healthy line of discourse.
Yeah, it sounds perfect.
An unhealthy ego is, Laura's officially texting Alex right now. We need to go to couples therapy. An unhealthy
ego. Sounds good. Sounds cheap.
An unhealthy ego is, it's your fault.
Yeah.
You did this.
You this. You this.
You do this on purpose.
You never.
The flip side of that coin is that in a healthy relationship, when someone brings these things to you, you have to sit down and shut up and listen while they throw that all out at you and not respond. You have to be very, very quiet. And then you say, how would you like us to talk about this? Because I would like to talk about it, and I want to make sure that you feel comfortable with the way that I want to talk about it. So how do you want to talk about it? And then I'll tell you how I want to talk about it. And there's a lot of people often say, Jack, how come you and your next ex-wife never had any fights? How can you possibly say that if you're divorced? Well, because we never slammed any doors. We never left a room angry. There was no slamming of counter,
you know, throw dishes
no
in the
dishes
sink to make
in
your
the
point.
Sink, no. Hey. I'm leaving. I'll never see you again. There was never any of that, except for one time, I think, or two times where I was being really passive aggressive to Sarah's friend because I didn't like the guy. But that's besides the point. That was the only time that we actually got to a point where I was like, I don't want to talk about this. I don't like that guy. He's a bad person. And then like an hour later, I was like, so after I've calmed down, I want to talk about this. Right. So there's a way to be healthy in relationships. I just think that most people don't know how to do it because they don't know what it means to actually love and care for somebody. Because when you love and care for somebody, when they point out something that you do, it's an inconsistency in your life, you take it seriously.
Sure. Yeah,
right. And then you analyze the validity of it, but you don't initially get defensive because this is your partner whomst you love. Right.
So to the article's point, they clearly say that it is worth investing in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is these days, everything's so tight economically and budgets are stretched so thin. The cost of everything's gone through the roof. Is that a sacrifice you can make, is not investing in the relationship? I mean, that seems like there's a no win here for
people. Yeah, but investing in a relationship is really easy. And everybody gets it wrong, right?
well, it seems to me from this article.
Lobster dinners.
Okay, yeah. Caviar, gold hamburgers. Okay,
trips to Tokyo.
This is how you invest in a relationship.
Yeah.
Women need to be heard. Men need to be seen. It's that simple, right? So when you want to make your husband feel good, you validate the things that he does for you. And if he's a layabout and he does nothing, then you chastise him and belittle him for doing it. No, I'm kidding.
No, I hear you. That's actually, you make jokes, but they're always based in truth. When somebody doesn't do things that seem respectable,
right?
How do you give him respect?
And women need to be heard. And so it's in a heterosexual relationship, it's a man's basically obligation in so many ways to want to care about the stuff that his wife says. One of the greatest lines in cinema of all time is from the movie The Breakup. Jennifer Aniston, what's his name? Vince Vaughn. There's a scene where they're arguing about the dishes, and she says, "You don't even help me with the dishes." And he said, Why would I do the dishes? No one likes to do the dishes. And then she says, "I want you to want to do the dishes." And he goes, "Why? Why would I want to do that?" What's in that line, "I want you to want," is everything that you ever need to know about a relationship. I want to do nice things because it is nice for my partner or whatever it is. Like, I do these things, I do these annoying things like the dishes or cleaning the bathroom or whatever it is because I want to do them for my partner because I love my partner.
Right? Do you put any value in like how-to self-help books about relationships? I mean, if people who can't afford $350 an hour,
yeah,
you go to couples therapy, but they're not in a position where they can just, you know, walk away, throw it all away. Maybe there's kids involved. Who knows? Have there been good books written about these things you just say? Men want to be seen. Women need to be heard.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, this is after 20 years of therapy.
Yeah. I mean, not all of us can be in a relationship with a trained full therapist that gives us, you just got peripherally smarter because of it.
Yeah. But I've also been in and out of therapy since I was 16. What I would say is if you want to fix something in your relationship and it's something that you think is fixable, you have to address it in the most careful way possible. Because that encourages that person to want to change that behavior. Does that make sense?
Perfect sense.
So, well, like, put. When I say to people, they're very basic. Let's say you got a partner who smokes. Oh, so gross. I can't stand it. I do nicotine lozenges now, right? Mm-hmm. I don't shame people for smoking. I say, these are better for me because, one, they don't damage my lungs, but two, I can smoke all the time and I don't have to give up nicotine that I love so very much. Blah, 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 blah. Point being, like, if you want someone to change a behavior, you can't shame them out of it. You have to work with them in unison so that they feel as if they are growing in tandem with you as opposed to being chastised.
They have to want to do the
dishes. They have to want to change. I have to want to do the dishes. I read this thing the other day. It's about a dad who the mom doesn't work, dad works, and he has a rule that Saturday is mom's day. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
So if mom has any plans that day, that's what mom gets to go do, right? That's his rule that he has for himself. He hasn't shared that with mom. She just makes her plans on Saturday, trusting that she has that day off, and he always gives it to her. Why? Because he wants to do that for his wife. Beautiful, right?
Solid, yeah.
All right, we'll take a really quick break when we get back. The world's oldest man says the secret to his longevity is luck plus fish and chips, which is super gross. Greasy. He probably smells bad, but he's 111 years old, so maybe he's on to something.
Yeah, right. We'll
talk about it right after this. Being old. Old people. Nothing I like making fun of more than old people, right? Look at what former President Donald Trump has really set that forward in motion, right?
Yeah, he's really bleeding into it.
I feel like, honestly, we don't give senior citizens enough guff. Am I right or am I right? Like, especially senior citizens who tragically lost their wife and their youngest daughter and then a son who served in this country, by the way, who died as a result of his exposure to burn pits. Mm. We should for sure make fun of more old people. Am I right or am I right? I feel like old people are really getting a pass on being made fun of, right? Especially like all the whole living for 80 years thing. Jeez, okay, guy, take all the air you want, I guess. I mean, when did this become a thing that we were just like, yeah, we'll just go ahead and like rip into people for being old? I don't really get it. You know, in Japan, there's a village. It's got about 10,000 people, and it's got the most centennials in the world.
Really?
And the ethos in the village is you never stop working. So all these people maintain their jobs to a greater or lesser degree. But the other thing is that in this section of Japan, it's considered to be good luck every day to touch or talk to an older person. So when you go into the shop, you touch hands or you speak to them. And so these people feel very engaged in their community. This documentary that I saw about this village, one of the fishermen in the village, he does spear diving. So he goes into the water to spear hunt fish. He's 105 years old.
You're kidding me.
He's 105. He looks like
he keeps coming back. That is good luck.
Right. Yeah. So the world's oldest man says his secret to living a long life is luck, moderation, and fish and chips every day. Super gross.
No, every Friday.
Oh, every
once
Friday.
A week, because he says moderation's the key to anything.
He's 111 years old, and he's confirmed as the new holder of the title of the Guinness World Records. It follows the death of the Venezuelan record holder, Juan Vincent Perez. He died. He was 114 years old. 114 years old. Can you believe that?
I can't imagine. I really can't.
30. When the D-Day happened, 30, right? Wow. I mean, can you even contextualize that? He is a retired accountant and great-grandfather, and he says he never smokes, he rarely drinks, and he follows no special diet apart from a fish and chip supper once a week. Of course, we're not on the East Coast, so we don't say supper because that's what heathens say. It's dinner, thank you very much, old man.
He's in Liverpool. Served in the British Army during World War II.
Oh, great. Wow.
Hey, greatest generation,
greatest
pal.
Greatest generation, whatever.
There's the fun I was looking for.
The world's oldest woman is 117 years old. She's Maria not going to remember that name, of Spain.
I was going to make a joke, but I won't.
Yeah, no. I don't even want to imagine what the joke was. So I've looked into a couple of things about longevity, and one of the things that I've found is, one, it has a lot to do with genes and the length of your telomeres, but then the other part of it is that often people who are centennials, they eat a calorie-deficient, nutrient-dense diet, so their body is not taxed by the amount of food.
Processing the garbage that we as Americans put in our system
exactly,
on a daily.
Exactly.
Okay, makes sense.
So, like, the younger that you are, under 50, calorie-dense food is necessary. Over 50, you don't really need it as much. You need more phytonutrients, things like seaweed, things like fish, things like, you know, even red meat, so on. And so all the things they said were bad for you are actually very, very good for you. More eggs, things of that nature. Nutrient-dense foods is what really helps you live longer. Not bowls of pasta, Spike.
I know.
Buddy.
Well, if you don't make your body work as hard, it will last longer and not wear out. It makes sense. Me and Mr. Tenniswood.
Tenniswood
of Liverpool.
A+, my friend. Great job, buddy. I'm looking at you. Nate Connors, how do I even begin to describe the visage that sits before me in the traffic booth?
Well, I'm wearing my commemorative Eclipse pullover today.
Dang, Nate Connors back at it again with the style choices. Laura, A+. Spike, give you a solid C+. Seth,
thanks,
I did
buddy.
A pretty good job. Here's a quote of the day.
Nice shooting, son. What's your name?
I now get to be very bored because Laura said we should talk about the eclipse. We are not pagans. We do not worship the sun god.
It's getting dark, Jack.
It's getting dark.
It's eerily dark.
And then it will not be dark.
It's getting light again.